Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Making of a Lawn podcast. Chris from Teed & Brown, he actually decided to swing by the studio. He was in the area, so we recorded an episode this week. We recap our Memorial Day weekend. We talk about the cookouts that we both had. I tell him some things I observed about my lawn that I was a little nervous about. And then we talk about summer watering, what to do and not to do. Chris has some funny stories from his golf course days when it comes to watering that are absolutely hilarious. And then we get into organic versus synthetic fertilizer, which I didn't even realize that there was organic fertilizer. Come to find out, there is. And the one mistake that you absolutely do not want to make if you're using organic fertilizer, Chris tells a story that you're going to want to listen to if you're planning on using organic. All that and more on this episode. Let's get into it. Hi, I'm Kevin Begley from Star 99.9, and this is Making of a Lawn, presented by Teed & Brown. And here we go. It's the week after Memorial Day. It's episode 4 of the Making of a Lawn podcast. I'm Kevin Begley, and I'm here with Christopher Brown from Teed & Brown. And Chris was just in the area, actually, around the studio here, and he decided to swing by to talk about how everything went over the long weekend.
Yeah, I was excited. I wanted to find out how things went over the Memorial Day weekend. I know the whole goal here is we're shooting for July 4th.
Right.
But Memorial Day weekend is sort of like that preview run where we're not quite ready, but let's just see how things are going. Sort of like Broadway before they actually open up shows for the regular run. You've got previews and you can go watch. Yep. There's always something goes wrong in the show, but you got a good taste. So I just wanted to come by and see how the preview run of the lawn barbecue went over Memorial Day weekend.
Totally. And that's exactly right. So I see Memorial Day weekend as like the unofficial kickoff to summer, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we did. So yesterday we had a cookout.
Nice.
The weather was beautiful. You know, of course, here in Connecticut. So it was really nice. We were, it was fun because we moved into our house last year, last May, and we weren't really able to, you know, sit out in the backyard and like enjoy the backyard because there was no lawn there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun to actually cook on the grill and sit there outside and actually see a green lawn there. But it was funny, as I was grilling, I was sort of noticing certain things aside from me needing to mow the lawn again. It's getting kind of long. So I'm going to have to do that pretty soon. But one thing I was noticing that I meant to ask you that I wanted to ask you about is the different coloration of the blades.
Mm.
So I noticed like in certain spots in the backyard, like some are super dark and some are a little more of like a lighter, almost Kelly green.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just the different strands? Is that the different, species of grass, or is it just...
Yeah, more than likely, that's all that's going on.
Yeah.
You've got different types of grass making up your lawn. We did some seeding this spring, obviously. And
right.
So the seed that we used is blends of different types of grass, and that's what you want. You don't want one, what you call monoculture, which is one type of grass throughout the whole property.
Yeah.
Because then that's really susceptible to a certain insect infestations or fungal infections or whatever. So we like to mix it up. But your lawn already brought with it a whole bunch of grass from previous years. Even though it wasn't nearly as full or nice as we would have liked, there's some of that mixed in as well. So you're going to see a lot of different variety.
Oh, okay.
But there's a lot of reasons why you might see that. Part of it is that you get different types of grass. Part of it is the soil underneath. It could just be that you've got spots that are a little bit more fertile than other spots.
That makes sense.
And the grass is greening up a little bit better in those spots.
Yeah.
And part of it actually, it's kind of funny, the mowing. Have you ever seen mowing stripes? You know, where there's like back and forth stripes when somebody mows the lawn?
Just the lines that you make when you...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
You just reminded me of this. It was kind of funny. When I was at Penn State, we had a big laugh about this. They had the student-run newspaper.
Yeah.
And one of the students did some sort of explanation, and I have no idea where they got their information or what they were thinking, but they were doing some sort of a report on why when you go to the football games, you can see in between the 5-yard markers, okay, the grass is totally different colors, right?
Yeah.
So between the 5-yard line and the 10-yard line, it might be a light green, and then between the 10 and the 15, it's a dark green.
Yeah.
And then between the 15 and the 20, it's light green, and it alternates as you go across the field. And they wanted to dig into this and find out why. So I remember reading the story and just smacking my head on the desk because they explained that the manager of the field had planted different species of grass in between the different hash marks so you can get that cool effect. What he didn't do is walk from one side of the stadium to the other, because he would have seen at that point that what appears to be the dark striped grass on one side is the light striped grass on the other side. And they flip.
That's funny.
Because all it is the direction in which the grass was mowed. It's as simple as that. And you can kind of think about it that way. If the grass is mowed towards you from the direction you're looking at, it's being slightly pushed over in your direction. And what's happening is the blades are kind of pointing towards you, and you're looking down into it a little bit more, into the darker underneath. Whereas if it's mowed away from you, it's pushing away, and you're seeing the leaves of the grass more. And so that appears lighter.
Right.
And it's just a simple visual trick.
Well, that's so funny, because every time I mow the lawn, I think about that. Like, is there a certain... So I usually do the picture frame where I mow, like, the outside first. Mm-hmm. So I have that. And then I go, like, the long way. But is there a certain way that's better or worse to do it? Like, whether you go either vertical or horizontal with the mowing?
Direction is just whatever works for you.
If
you want to try to get that striped effect, which I know people who really like that striped effect.
Or like a diagonal.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally get it. But the regular rotary mowers, those are the ones with the spinning blade that most people use on their lawn, don't really produce that much of that effect. They just don't push the grass over in that direction that much.
Yeah.
Whereas the real type mowers, it's like those old fashioned ones. Remember your like grandfather would
push
along. Okay. Same exact technology is going on golf courses and on sports fields and everything. They're using those real mowers, old fashioned type mowers, but they're really high tech nowadays, and
like
they are powered and you know, you're not having to force the thing along.
Yeah.
So, but that's the kind of mower that creates that pushed over striped effect.
Oh, okay.
Now, one of the things you can do, if you wanted to look it up just for the cool effect, is there's rollers that you can attach to the back of your rotary mower that will then sort of roll behind it and push the grass over so you can get the stripes, if that's what
you're
looking
for. Oh, that's neat. Because if you're just using a standard mower, you're probably getting the wheel lines, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's really what it is.
That's all you're getting, yeah.
Yeah, because I always thought about that too, even at baseball fields. So like at, you know, Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park, wherever it is, when they do the team's logo or whatever.
Yeah, isn't that great?
It's so awesome. And I'm assuming they use like a stencil for that. They must use something that they go by.
I've never been involved in that sort of thing, but my understanding is, I would imagine, yes, they've got some sort of a stencil. But the color is really just achieved by
that, what
mowing
you were just saying,
the grass in the specific direction.
Wow.
And being very careful to do that the right way. That's my understanding. Although if anybody out there actually works on one of those fields,
maybe someone does. Yeah.
This is something I never had a chance to actually get involved with. So I'm making an assumption here. I might be wrong. If you have better information, please shoot us a message and let us know.
If you work at Yankee Stadium or Fenway Park, please let us know. And by the way, how was your long weekend from Memorial Day? I was looking at your Instagram for Teton Brown, the Teton Brown Instagram, and it looked like a big company party on Friday. It was fun.
Oh, it was a blast, We do those every once in a while. It's just a great way to show appreciation for the employees as they're out there working some long hours, especially in the springtime.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
And so, we got Hoodoo Brown Barbecue out of Ridgefield.
They
came down and provided all the, you know, sustenance for everybody. And we ordered more food than we thought we would need, and they put a pretty darn good dent in it. Not surprisingly. And, people brought guitars and games, and I had a magician come and put on a show.
That's so fun.
It's really nice to just sort of sit back and sort of take a break and enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to just being constantly on work duty nonstop. And so, it was a lot of fun.
I had never actually seen your offices, but on those pictures on the Teton Brown Instagram, it looks like a cool spot. Is it like, it's like a warehouse almost? Or like a renovated warehouse? Or is it an office building?
A little bit. No, it's more of, it's its own building. It's a small office kind of building, and there's different floors. So the lowest floor is where sort of the operations all happen.
Okay.
And
that's
where the machines and the fertilizer is stored and everything like that. And then you go up one floor, and that's where most of the behind the scenes action
office
happens,
space,
where
you
know, all the phone calls come in and the jobs are planned for the next day in the organization. And then the top floor, so it's three floors total.
Yep.
The top floor is where all the education and continuing training goes on. So we have like a giant classroom and library and things. And so we're always pushing our guys to learn more about, you know, turfgrass science, good customer service skills, things like that. So we've got it sort of divided into three tiers. And most of the pictures were from that middle tier where there's also like a locker room there. And then we've got a nice sized parking lot where we did a lot of games and stuff.
That's so fun.
But no, you got to come down next time. So
I got
to
come
do
see the
one
office.
Of the parties. Exactly. Yeah. And have you come on down and join us.
Yeah.
And
now, over the Memorial Day weekend, did you go to any other cookouts? Because in my head, if you go to someone's house, I feel like you're constantly going to look at the lawn and be like, what What is wrong with this lawn?
Yeah, I've learned the hard way that, you know, a friend of mine's a therapist who, you know, deals with people for their personal issues and everything like
that.
And he said to me at one point in time, you know, you never diagnose your friends because then you won't have any friends. Right. And I learned that probably a good idea to use that advice on the home lawn arena as well. So, yeah, I'm at the yard. I was at a friend's place and he had a lovely cookout. It was very low key, not like the party at the office. And we were hanging around throwing footballs and stuff. And I'm looking down going, oh, look, he's got a little bit of red thread here. He's got a little bit of this going on here.
You just keep it in your head.
Just keep it in the head. Yep. Just keep it to myself and just sort of leave it at that. Yeah. And everything went very smoothly and we had a great time. Yeah.
That's fun. Now, the other thing, Chris, that I noticed yesterday while cooking on the patio for Memorial Day is that it was getting a little warmer out. So yesterday was, at least here in Milford, was sort of like in the, I don't know, mid-70s, almost near 80. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking to myself, I was looking at my grass and saying, it's going to get hot real soon. And there's going to be a critical water issue going on where I need to, you know, make sure I do this right. So what are some things to keep in mind as we get into the hot summer?
Yeah. Summer's coming.
Yeah.
And it's coming right around the corner. The one biggest one I would say is try not to keep your expectations too high. It's unfortunately you do get it just too hot sometimes.
Yeah.
And I've been over at friends' houses where they've said, oh, I'm watering my lawn every day and it's still all brown. I say, yeah, it's too hot. No, but I've been watering every day. I said, yeah, no, I didn't say it was too dry. I said it was too hot. Two different things. Imagine throwing a well-watered houseplant into the oven and cranking it up. It's going to die.
Right.
And that's kind of what happens. How much water is being put down. Mm. Once the temperatures get above around 90 degrees, the grass just starts stressing out.
Yeah.
And some of that is related to the fact that the soil will dry out quicker when it's hotter, and therefore it presents as drought stress. And so you can alleviate some of it. But some of it is just, it's just too hot for this stuff to really survive.
Right. You can water as much as you want, and it's just going to be too hot.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And actually, in those circumstances, you can create worse problems by encouraging certain diseases that are brought out by lots of water and heat.
So, now, does it make a difference if you start your watering now and get it sort of, you know, be on the regular water pattern as we get into the summer, rather than waiting till like, you know, mid-July and being like, oh, it's really hot, I better start watering like crazy?
No, watering is pretty immediate to the moment. So watering a lot right now isn't going to set you up for a better lawn in July.
Okay. Yeah.
It's really much more getting the water down for the grass right now.
Yeah. Yep. And then when you're watering in the summertime, should you obviously once it gets hotter, you should put down more water than you do now in the springtime?
Yeah, I'm going to hesitate to give too much specific instruction on this one.
And the reason
for that is because this is one of those things that's deceptively complicated.
It seems
like it should be simple, but it's actually really complicated to water correctly.
Yeah.
And I'll kind of harken back to my golf course days where the superintendents, literally every irrigation head, every sprinkler head was being tweaked down to, okay, we're going to put this one on for 10 minutes tonight. And this one over here is going for 12 and a half minutes.
Yeah.
And that one over there, we're going to put on for 14.3 minutes. And this one over here. And they would really get it down to this exact science, doing measurements of the soil moisture, doing air temperature, humidity versus, you know, dryness.
Yeah.
Everything. Running into these calculations and dialing it right in perfectly. And you just can't do that on your lawn. I mean, you can't even come close to that.
Right, yeah.
It's just no way. And I wouldn't recommend you even try. I
mean, right, it's
just
not worth the headache.
No. I mean, unless you were just really crazy into it and this was just your passion. Like, I know people have these incredible high-level passions for things. And okay, great, if that's really what makes you happy. But most people are going to just be driven nuts by it if they try it.
Right.
So that all said, the general rule of thumb as things are getting hotter is, yeah, you're going to want to water a little bit more, but a couple times a week and really heavy and really deep. So you really want to soak the soil profile.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because as things get hotter and drier, the soil actually tends to become a little bit hydrophobic.
Oh.
Now, as the word implies, hydrophobic, it repels water.
Yeah.
It's not scared of water, I should be.
Right.
Should be.
Water!
Yeah. But it does. It repels water.
Yeah.
And there's actually a phenomena that I've encountered that's called, there's two different types of things, but they're very similar. One is called hot spots. One is called isolated dry spots.
Hmm.
And they're very technical differences. But essentially what happens is you get areas that become very hydrophobic and you can't get them wet. And I remember when I was working on a golf course at one point in time, and I was a you know, 18-year-old intern, and the superintendent basically said, hey, we got this area over here. It dries out a lot. I need you to go hand water that each morning. So, okay, great. So I grab the hose and I go over there, and these hoses were like fire hoses. I mean, you have to lean into it and hold this thing. So, I mean, it's putting out a ton of water.
Yeah.
And I'm just drenching this area. I mean, absolutely soaking it. And when I was done, turned off the hose, walked over to it, took a soil probe, and poked it in just to see, okay, it should be nice and wet. And I pulled the soil probe out, and it was dry as dust.
After slamming it with the fire hose?
Yeah, it was like a crazy amount of water that I put down. And I still, it was like seeing the most amazing magic trick you've ever seen on stage. I mean, imagine you just see something that you just think, that's not possible. There's no way that's possible. And you have no idea how these magicians did it. It was incredible. Well, somehow or another, like a million gallons of water just disappeared on me.
Right. Like, what happened?
Exactly. It was crazy. And really what happened was it just all ran off to the sides of this one area that had become totally hydrophobic.
Oh.
It didn't look like that was happening. It looked like it was all soaking in.
Yeah.
And the only way we were able to end up getting water down into the soil in that area is by punching a whole bunch of holes that would create, you know, sort of chambers where the water could get down into.
Yeah.
And then adding a wetting agent. And when I say wetting, I'm W-E-T-T-I-N-G, not someone who, you know, brokers weddings.
Right.
So a wetting agent.
Right.
Which is essentially like soap. It's basically, it's very non-toxic, and we actually use it on some of our customers, too, where they have soil that tends to become hydrophobic, but you put it down, and it breaks down the surface tension of the water, and it helps it to soak down into the soil better. So by doing both of those, we're able to sort of, like, force water down into the soil in that area.
Yeah.
And once you've got it wet, if you can keep it wet, it ends up staying that way. It doesn't repel the water as quickly, but once it dries out... Ugh, you're toast again.
Yeah, it's just good. Come like late August. Yeah. I think a lot of people are going to be just looking at burned out lawns.
Yeah, to a large extent. And so, I mean, I think the lesson out of this for homeowners is if you've got a lawn and you've been watering and you've been working on it, and there's like sections or like a spot or something like that that just turns brown no matter what you do, there could be a ton of reasons for that. One of them might be that you've just got this isolated dry spot phenomenon going on. Yeah. And again, I would advise don't pull your hair out over it. Just like let it run its course.
Yeah.
When the weather cools off and it gets a little bit nicer, things should bounce back and be okay. But it's it can be frustrating. The other thing I would check is take a screwdriver or some sort of a tool, poke it down into the soil and see if you hear a clinking sound like an inch down in, because oftentimes it's just that there's a rock right near the surface.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And what happens is the grass really can't develop a root system deeper than like half an inch. And there's no way you can get the grass to stay healthy and green through a whole summer with no root system.
So it could be that certain section that just has rock underneath the soil.
That's very common.
Yeah.
That's actually the primary cause. The isolated dry spot thing is kind of a funky scientific thing that I really get a kick out of.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not as common. The rocks are really the primary culprit.
Yeah. Now, I had a random question about fertilizer. So I've been, you know, hearing a lot of people talk about organic fertilizer, almost like it's, you know, like they're at Whole Foods, like organic food. Now, what's the difference between organic fertilizer and like a synthetic fertilizer? Is it better? Is it what's the difference?
Yeah, it's basically the same nutrients. And so organic fertilizers are really great. The only issue with them is that they're a little bit less predictable because they're very dependent upon the weather to work correctly. So organic fertilizers come from a variety of sources. But just to give you an idea how they work, let me tell you a quick story. There's a product called Milorganite, and it's a very popular one, and you'll see it out there.
Yep.
And that name, Milorganite, stands for Milwaukee Organic Nitrogen.
Oh.
Okay.
So that was creative of them.
Yeah. So Milorganite. You see where that comes from. Okay. Nitrogen is the key greening up nutrient that you're going to find in fertilizers. Okay.
Yeah.
So apparently at some point in the past, and my apologies to anybody who works for the company that produces this, I might get some of the timeline wrong here, but it was a project that was put together by the city to find something to do with the sewage sludge.
Oh.
Okay, so like the city sewage, they were like, what do we do with this? Someone said, well, let's make fertilizer out of it. Well, there's lots of nutrients in that.
Yeah.
So they created a facility that actually processed it, you know, killed the bacteria, did everything so that it's safe to actually use.
Right.
And when you spread it, you kind of get that aroma of Milwaukee sewer. It's like, it's not a pleasant odor, but it's not horrible. I mean, they've done a good job of knocking that down significantly. So it's bearable, but you get a little hint of what it once was. Yeah. So when they first made it, they figured, okay, this is a problem. product. It should work. We know it's got the nutrients in there. It should be feeding the grass. And they were just coming out of a winter. Mm-hmm. And they actually fertilized some fairways at a local golf course. Mm. And put it down, and now it's relatively low concentration of nutrients in this product.
Yeah.
So you put it down at a heavier rate, usually, if you're looking for the same effect. But they put it down on this golf course and waited, and, you know, a couple weeks went by, and nothing. Just didn't see any effect. And thought, oh, this is odd. We know the nutrients are in there. We've done scientific analysis and probably had guys in white lab coats and beakers and stuff. You know?
Right.
And say, well, you know, it's kind of low in concentration. Let's put it down again. Let's put a little more down. Say, put a little more down, and... nothing. A couple weeks go by, not really anything. What they didn't realize is that it was very temperature dependent, and it was still cold because it was in a very raw, natural form, and before the grass could use it, it needed to be broken down by soil microbes. The soil microbes, none of them were active because it was way too cold.
It was, oh, wow.
Okay, so they're dumping more and more of this on.
Like, it's not working. It's not working.
Let's keep trying. Let's keep going.
Oh,
and then,
no.
And then what happens when all of a sudden the weather warms up, boom, now they got a hay field.
It's just. Oh, that's amazing.
The superintendent, I think, probably had people out there mowing every, like, 4 hours just to keep up with it because they just over-fertilized the daylights out of
it. It became,
area.
Like, super grass.
Pretty much, yeah. And I'm sure they developed a whole host of problems from over-fertilizing in that case. But it was a good lesson in, okay, the organic fertilizers really need the active soil microbes in the soil to break it down for the grass to be able to use.
Right. So,
okay.
So if you're going to use one of those, you don't want to, you want to wait till the ground becomes warmer.
Or at least understand that you're not going to get the effect until that happens.
Right.
Okay. But the great point is, you put it down... and if the soil is not warm enough, if the ground isn't warm enough, and it's raining a lot and you're watering a lot, it's not washing through, it's not leaching out into the groundwater or anything like that. It's just sitting there in that form because it's not usable until the microbes break it down.
Right.
Once that happens, the nutrients get released, the grass uses them up, and boom, it's there. So you get it's a very nice product that way. In that, and by the way, you know, I mentioned Milorganite, but that's not the only one. There's a ton
There's
of organic
a bunch of them
products
probably,
out
right?
there.
Yeah.
But they provide what's called a natural slow release because the grass only gets it as fast as the microbes are able to break it down and release the nutrients.
Yeah, yeah.
Synthetic fertilizers. Okay, so now we talked about organics. We know how that works.
Right.
Synthetic fertilizers come from another variety of sources, the most common one being actually the petroleum industry. It's a byproduct of petroleum.
Oh, wow.
And those are pretty much... not temperature dependent. You put them down, the grass can use them right away, boom,
right,
and start filling in and start greening up and everything.
Yeah.
So in cooler weather, if you're trying to build the lawn and get it looking nicer, the synthetic ones tend to be the way to go. And they've developed a lot of different things that will allow synthetic fertilizers to be released over a longer period of time, so you can get a much more controlled slow release out of the product. So you can put it down now and you know it's going to last 12 weeks, let's say.
Right.
With organic fertilizers, because it all depends on how fast the soil microbes break it down, you might get 4 weeks of growth out of it, or you might get 8 weeks of growth out of it.
Right, it all depends
on you really don't know. It's a little less predictable.
Yeah.
So, but in the end, really, you're talking about putting the same nutrients down that the grass needs.
Right.
It's going to green up and you're going to get effect out of both.
Is there any difference between the organic and the synthetic as far as like the chemicals towards, you know, pets or people, or is it basically the same?
No, in that case, it's basically the same. I mean, if, you know, your pet ate a bowl of, you know, processed manure, it's not good for him. It's just, it's not going to be a good thing. However, these aren't really, when you think about lawn chemicals, those are more the pest control products that get rid of insects and weeds. And that's kind of a different category of stuff.
Yeah.
So the fertilizers, again, you pour a bowl full of it for one of your pets and they eat the whole thing.
Probably not good.
It's not good for them, but it's not a product that you have to be overly concerned about them being exposed to.
Yeah.
The one caveat on that I'll mention is I've seen some dogs that do get have like really overly sensitive paws, and the fertilizer pellets can sometimes get stuck in the paws and cause a lot of irritation.
Oh, that's a good point.
So if you do have a pet who has that issue, you know, be aware if your pet all of a sudden is licking their paws a lot or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of check on that. And it may just be one of those things. I mean, hey, I'm a dog lover.
Yeah.
I would tell you flat out, if you've got a dog who just can't tolerate fertilizers on the lawn, you know what? Let the lawn go. Don't worry about it.
Right,
you know, you're better
it's
off
fine.
Letting. Yeah, exactly.
That's a good point, though, because you always think about them, like, ingesting it from the lawn, but if it's in their paws, I didn't even think of that part.
It's just a surface irritant, but it can be really irritating to them. So it's a rare thing. I would say maybe... One in a few hundred dogs has that issue.
Yeah.
But it happens.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. So, we covered a lot post-Memorial Day on this episode 4. And then episode 5, which will be coming out soon, we're actually going to get into certain insects in the lawn. Because I know there's a lot of problems that can happen with the different types of insects, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. So, we'll get into that next. I know if you're trying to keep up your lawn, you've probably noticed certain insects, you know, already. So, we'll get into more of that. And then we're going to talk about application number 3. So, I've had 2 applications so far on my lawn currently. And application 3 involves insect type?
It's going to be something to prevent insect problems.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
All right, so we'll get into that next. Thanks again, Chris. It's awesome as always to talk to you. It's the Making of a Lawn podcast with Teton Brown.
My pleasure.